Talking Tesla.
I'm not sure if like my foot should be on the brake or the accelerator.
Because they put rings on Elon.
It must be some sort of geometrical algorithm.
I don't need to touch the steering wheel there, Tom.
Oh, I'm sure there's some math. So SpaceX, here's the deal. Landing a rocket on a drone ship is key.
Charger.
How am I expected to drive a car without autopilot?
Safely.
Charger. You know, I'm not a good parker, Tom.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit it. Yeah. I just think that this is a car company that is run by super geeks. All the other cars are going to be stupid cars compared to this car.
You don't even have to remember that. You've got a Model X. I have seen the future, and it is light pole charging.
No, I wouldn't call it a screw-up. Do you like your Model X?
God, it's beautiful.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Talking Tesla 121. It's one Robert.
Yes.
One Tom and Mel, and both of his personalities are in the room today.
Thank
Melvis,
you
have been missed. Mostly not by us, by Talking Tesla Nation. Yeah. They talk about you on the Twitter.
Uh-huh.
We really would love Mel and his accent and his inability to say our names during the letter segment. Mm-hmm. Can you please, please, please bring him back?
Yep. Well, it turns out that I'm a lovable character.
You are?
That was me answering the other voice in my head.
Oh.
Yeah.
What?
Hey, I'm back for a little while. Just for a little bit. Actually, just for a very short time.
Like 4 minutes?
Yeah, because I got to go back to UCLA.
So in the scope of this two-hour marathon talk...
What are you guys doing for the show?
In the scope of this very long talk, you're going to be here for 4 minutes. People at the end of this show, this is the takeaway moment's going to be, did I hear Mel on that show?
Dude, last week I listened to 2X, and it still took 4 hours to go through this. It's crazy.
That is inaccurate. You must have been listening at 0.5 if it took 4 hours.
It seemed like 8 hours.
You know what? I don't want to point fingers at who's to blame about the length of the show, Robert. But because it's a radio show, Robert. I can't just point fingers at you. That's ridiculous. No one would even know who I was pointing at. A lot of interesting things happened, but the most interesting thing, 18 hours ago, I posted a poll.
Yes.
I was feeling a little funny hilarity, just wanted to see what the people were all about. Mm-hmm. And the question was, is Talking Tesla too long each week? Question mark.
Yes, it is.
Three choices. Yes.
Yes.
No. Those are the two obvious
ones. Okay, that's obvious.
The last one was, your poll was stupid. Your poll is stupid because I don't know. Maybe people don't give
maybe
a crap what the
stupid
hell we think.
Yeah.
It might have been stupid. But I will tell you this. Of all of the comments, and there were 29 comments, 500 plus voting, 517 voters.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's, whew, that's over 500.
That's almost 10, 12% of all of our followers on the Twitter. Almost everybody to a man and woman said no.
What?
It's not too long. Except for one couple of people, yes, it's too long. One guy said, you can make it half as long, but you got to do it twice a week.
What?
So that's basically the same thing. Robert is now taking live tweeting. This is why this show takes 2 hours.
Well, it takes you 4.5 hours to get to the point. What's
me?
The point?
It takes me to get...
What is the point?
I'm going to tell us the about the poll. What did the people say in the poll?
Oh, I didn't even get to that? That's weird. So no.
Is it?
Yes was 21%. 21% of people think it's too long.
Thank you.
59% of people don't think it's too long. Okay. That's the majority.
And if that was a presidential election, you'd be elected.
I would be the president of the world. And honestly, almost as many people said my poll was stupid as said, yes, the show's too long.
Really?
So,
like 20%?
It was 21, 59, and 20 that said my poll is stupid.
Wow.
And
well,
I don't
know how to measure that up because, you know, if I say if this was an election for president, you would have won in a mandate.
I would. The third party candidate split the vote.
I reckon if they did that poll again right now, they'd say, yeah, that's too freaking long. Right,
right this moment.
Yeah,
but no one can hear
second.
This show right live. But like, we're not tweeting live periscoping or anything like that. I also tweeted a photo of some crates I found behind a location. And the question in that particular tweet...
I'm surprised on that tweet that you didn't like exclude me.
I didn't exclude you.
You're not exclusionary.
I actually added you.
Yes.
If anything, I guessed that you would have the answer. And so I sent up a couple of photos of Tesla crates, and I said, where do you think this mythical new supercharger is? And Robert, no one got it right, for Robert.
My favorite answer was Mordor.
Mordor. Yeah. That's not where the supercharger is. You know why? Because Mordor doesn't need supercharger because they don't have Teslas in the...
It's driven by magic. The hobbits.
All right, so that's it. Couple of tweets. I was having some fun with you people. Very fun out there. A lot of good stuff happening in the world of the Talking Tesla.
Hey, and I've been doing a lot of videos because it turns out that I can do the videos in my own time, in my own special places.
Narcissist much?
Thank you. And I don't have to be with you people, which makes me happy.
Robert really likes it when you're around because I'm not picking on him.
Yeah. So I've been doing a lot of videos. I'm going to keep them coming because, you know, I can do them in my own time. I just wanted to say, hide everybody.
I like the videos.
Tom and I dropped some video. He came over to the house.
We did.
We did some videoing.
So tired in that video.
The Patreons have been enjoying it for a few days before it goes live to the world.
Yeah.
But it should be live to the world by the time you hear this. So it's a pretty fun little video, I thought.
Yeah.
Tom goes through some of the secret issues,
Model
that are in the Model 3.
Three-ishness.
I didn't know that you could change your front door, your front alignment.
Your front adjustments.
Front adjustment. That's
you
the word.
You can front adjust all your Teslas.
Mother frunk adjustment.
You can frunk just.
You can frunk it up.
Yeah. That thing is get frunky with it.
So, Tom, you've now had your car again.
I do have my car again. That's right.
How is it? Are you enjoying it? Talk to the people.
Amazing. A lot of fun. Yesterday, last night, on my way home from where I was when I dropped the pole on everybody, I turned on the autopilot just to see if the calibration had finished. It had. And so all of a sudden, the car takes off because it's set for, I don't know, 787 miles an hour. I think that's in kilometers, and, you know, we're not really kind of sure about what's going on. So it turned on. It was at night. I'll be honest with you, it made me very nervous initially. I was very, very freaked out. But today, if you were to ask me today, because I drove it over here.
You drove it over here?
No. If you were going to ask me today, do I really enjoy driving the Model 3? I would say to you, I have no idea because it's doing all the driving.
I find actually the Model 3 hardware 2.1 or whatever it's called is working better than the hardware 2.0 in the S. It seems to be a lot more stable than the S. I don't know why.
It's still a little wonky wonky.
It's like a, you know, the S is a drunken 15-year-old.
Yeah.
It feels like the 3 is a drunken 17-year-old.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Also, I charged it at a supercharger today.
How did that go, Thomas?
Okay, so we've been having this back and forth about how many kilowatts you can charge, your charge rate, max charge rate in the S's and stuff. And people were getting up to what, 120?
Yeah, we've got a 120 in official, a lot of 118s.
I got up to 103 today.
That's awesome.
I was charging at 399 miles per hour.
What was your state of charge?
Wow.
I started at about 59 miles remaining.
So it's about one-sixth of your range?
That is accurate. And then I sat there, and it started to slow down. And I have photos of the whole entire slowdown process. I went to a supercharger and tested that. I went to the destination charger at the Burbank Service Center to see how that was. Very slow.
Really?
Very slow.
You can do that at my house. I have a destination charger. The destination is my house.
17 miles an hour at that one at 40
That's
amps.
Terrible.
At 40 amps, yeah. That was the,
that's really
the,
slow.
Mine was
the
getting
regular
the full
destination charger in front of the Burbank Tesla shop.
They must
shop.
Have been having a very bad electricity day because that.
But it's set for 40 amps.
Yeah, but at 40 amps, you should be getting like 27 miles, 28 miles an hour.
Well, at home on mine, which has an 80, it had its 100 amp
yours
circuit.
Is 80.
80 amp circuit, 100 amp circuit. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was getting like 45 miles per hour of charge.
That's
on
that's
the
baller.
S or the 3?
On the 3.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Trey. We did in the video, we show Mel's less than stellar Model 3 charging station.
Is this the hook? The hookup?
Did you see that video?
Good. Yes, I did.
Did you cringe?
I started a new hashtag. It's called hashtag zip the hook.
Hashtag what the hell is wrong with you, Herbert?
For those of you that haven't seen it, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, so I've just got a 120 volt sort of plug in the front of the house. So I put a Tesla charger on there, but I needed somewhere to hook it. So there was a sort of steel pole at the front of my house. So I just used some zip ties and imagination.
It's a coat hook. It's literally a coat hook that you would screw to your wall.
Yeah, and, but it's and a nice one. And the worst part about it's chromed. It's really chromed. Nice.
Sure, it's lovely. But the worst part about it is I showed up, the freaking cord is not even wrapped on. It's just laying on the ground, and the handle end of it is just laying.
I'm more worried about where the brick is plugged into the extension cord and all the moisture that can get in there and blow the circuit.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to wrap that in a special substance. Yeah.
It's called duct tape.
I got charged for charging today.
Oh, how did that work?
At the Burbank Supercharger.
Does it pop up on your app? Or?
It does. No, it just pops up on the screen at the right the right corner, paid supercharging. Got charged $3.20.
How much per kilowatt hour were you paying?
I have no idea.
Can you look it up? I mean, the people want to know.
How many miles did you get for that?
Well, I don't really want to divulge too much about that situation.
Really?
Not on the show, because I found some very secret information that there's no way.
Huh?
No way I'm telling either one of you
what
I found out today.
You found a way to charge without getting charged?
We haven't even got to the Zuma mission yet.
Nope.
That's the secret of the show.
That's the secret sauce right there. So, no, I'm not giving away this secret.
I'm just wondering,
is there
a hack? Nope. Like, can you go to a supercharger, right? All the threes have to pay, but is there like a cutoff? Like, if you can charge almost a kilowatt and pull out the plug and get like 9/10 of a kilowatt and then plug it back in and get another 9/10, you know, it's like, who's going
to
jack?
Might be able to.
Who's going to jack the supercharger and then publish it online?
Just pay the money. We need more superchargers.
Yeah,
Don't be cheap.
I paid the money. I paid for the supercharging.
But you got more than you bargained for?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So
it doesn't say in the app anything about the paying for the charging. Maybe if I go
if you log into your site, it'll say.
Look on your credit card.
But I did want to say before I take off that...
Oh, you're leaving?
Yeah, I've got to go.
I've
got to go get my 3 and drive to UCLA. But the Model S versus the Model 3 drive, it's been on a number of those videos, but I know some of you don't watch those videos, although 270,000 watched one of those videos, which is pretty cool. I like the S a lot. And you and I talked about on that last video. The S is definitely quieter when you're driving around. The 3 is quiet, but the S is super quiet. But in terms of zippiness and everything, I really prefer the drive of the 3, even though it's a little tighter and you feel the road a bit more. I like the way that I can see everything. I like that it's sporty. I really like the car. And guess what?
What?
I can park it without crashing into things.
So
first time ever.
So it's a smaller car. You're a smaller man.
It seems
to be a good fit.
I think if you're my size, hobbit size, we like to call it.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Are the pedals too small for your giant hobbit feet?
Well, 5'8 is 5'9. I'm in that area. So I'm like a normal person.
You're actually like a very tall hobbit.
I valeted the thing yesterday. That was
How did that go down?
It was the did guy. You? First off, I think it was a situation where ordinarily I could have parked it, but the guy was like, no, you can't park.
I want to drive that.
And he's like, he said to me, this is what he said. He said, I need the key. And I said, no, you don't. And he's like, I need the key. And I'm like, no, you don't. And then I thought, yeah, he does. He actually does need the key. Luckily, I had it with me, but I handed it to him. But we ran into a situation. So here's a little tip for you in Tesla Nation. If you give your key to the valet guy and you look him in the eye and you say, do not lose this key. Don't. Yeah. Like, do that first, but then make sure you show him how to start the car with
yes,
the key. Because I didn't do that.
Right.
He got in the car, he put the key in the cup holder, and he couldn't start it. I'm watching him from like 25 yards away, and I'm like, he can't figure it out. And I just walked over there, and then I got in. I was like, all high and mighty, and I was like, it's okay. You don't know what you're doing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't show him what I was doing. He didn't look on the back of the card, so he didn't put the card in that little spot on the center console. Couldn't
start it. Behind the cup holders.
Yeah.
So this is like how you can get your car to be parked like the Ferrari 512 or whatever. They'll just leave it there right in front because they can't figure it out.
I did find myself looking at the app to see the location of it to make sure that he wasn't driving it around.
Did you put it on valet mode?
I did put it on valet mode.
Good.
I put my little code in. Do you guys know what valet mode does?
Yeah, it stops them being able to zip around at 150 miles an hour.
Yeah, it tempers the speed. It tempers the top speed. There were other features they were going to put on it, but I don't recall them ever.
Well, one of them is if you drive more than, I think it's a mile from where you dropped off, it puts tear gas into the internal compartment. That's one of them. And then if you're more than like 10 miles away, knives come out and just slices the driver into small pieces.
I think the seat heaters come on and the parking and the strap.
Yeah, seatbelt locks and just pulls and pulls and pulls until it chokes to death.
Until they have a seatbelt sign.
Yes, exactly. Hey, so that's it. I got to go. But loving the Model 3. Mm-hmm. Loving the Tom's got the Model 3. Thinking the world's going to get Model 3s. Mm-hmm. Read an article that said it's a really great car, but they've got one problem. They're not going to be able to build them fast enough.
These people are quoting you.
I believe they are.
You understand that?
I think they are.
There are people literally making articles based on your tongue-in-cheek YouTube, Tesla's Got a Problem, posting. Yes.
Wow.
Do you not? What is
this? This is so circular because I said that and then somebody wrote it and then I read it. And I'm like, everybody's talking about this. Yes. It's much like another situation in another house that's white.
People are literally retweeting your craziness, sarcastic comments as you saying it has a problem.
Wow. Wow, I just got sucked into a vortex that I didn't even know I'd created.
This whole show is out of its mind.
Look, ladies and gentlemen, before I go, I'd do one more accent.
Thank God. I got
to go to UCLA. The Kenyans are doing great, but still in the hospital, hopefully coming home soon. It's been great. Hey, ladies, it's been great. Hey, ladies! I'll meet you here again soon, I'm sure of it.
Hmm.
Hey, patrons.
It's good to have you.
Thanks, patrons. More stuff coming.
Supercharging's 20 cents a kilowatt.
What the what?
In That's California.
Yes.
That's a lot.
No.
It's about a third the price of gas.
It's a lot less than any other fast charger that charges you in California.
Gosh, found one of those near the new Calabasas supercharger as well. There's an EVgo over there with the CCS and a CHAdeMO dual bagger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right there next to the city that is the Hall of Calabasas.
Herbert. Nice.
See ya.
Bye, Melvis.
Bye, Mel.
Thanks for coming. People miss you.
Yeah.
We're not those people.
Come back sometime.
Just kidding. Of course we miss you. Thank God he's gone. Let's talk
about
it.
Wow, now the show can start.
Yeah. All right, Robert. Shall we continue? The first thing that we want to talk about today, I guess, since we've already talked about Model 3, we've had our fun. Enjoyed our frivolity. We've talked about the fast charging that I was capable of getting.
We should thank all the Patreons, right? Because they're encouraging Mel to make all of these YouTube videos, which are obviously having a great effect. So, Patreons, keep it up.
He's never been more prolific, and it's all because of you, Patreons.
Very true.
So, if you want to see more of that drivel, I mean, great information. Feel free to
join us on Patreon.
Join us on Patreon. patreon.talkingtesla.org.com/biz, I think is the whole URL.
I don't know where you pulled that out from, but I'm more than impressed.
That is wildly inaccurate. Can you not read sarcasm in my voice, Robert? Because this is maybe
I'm a gullible kind of guy at times.
This may be the crux of the problem that the two of us are having. I'm just saying.
So our first story is about climate change.
Okay.
And it's a positive story this time, which I'm very happy about this story because it turns out that Mr. Perry, who is in charge of the EPA, has been stopped. He wants to, I'll just read the title of this story from the New York Times. Rick Perry's plan to rescue struggling coal mine and nuclear plants is rejected.
Sucker.
And so it turns out that there was this plan dreamed up that coal mines, or I should say coal-fired power plants, which promote coal mining, and nuclear plants, which are struggling right now, are going to be boosted by the EPA because they can maintain grid stability.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that I abstracted from this article, but I'm going to try and keep it short since we've already gone like close to half an hour with Mel blabbling on here.
It was so fun to have him, though.
It was fun. And so it turns out that Mr. Perry was proposing or stating that the grid is unstable because renewables and wind and solar are not able to serve the grid because they're intermittent. They don't work at night in the case of solar.
Mm-hmm.
And that we need to have power plants that can have 90 days of fuel on hand.
On site.
Yeah. 90 days. As if wind is not going to work for 90 days or solar isn't going to work for 90 days. So
if the sun doesn't show up for 90 days,
we have other problems.
That's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad, right?
We have major problems. Uh-huh. And so he was proposing that only plants such as those who could keep 90 days of fuel on site should be subsidized for their ability to maintain the stability of our grid.
There's only two kinds of plants.
Yeah.
That could possibly work for.
Can't be natural gas plants, which burn quite smoothly and relatively clean if you look at coal.
But it's pipeline-y also,
right? So they don't store 90 days of natural gas on site. That would be silly is right. And so it turns out that the federal panel that oversees such decisions came down and said, absolutely not. It's not a decision that can be changed. They're unanimous in their final quashing of this silly idea, although they pointed out in the article that these commissioners were, for the most part, I think 4 of the 5 were nominated by Mr. Trump, President Trump, and that they've historically operated independently of the executive branch, though I think we're going to have to watch for what happens if there will be a shakeout of this commission. And it's interesting to say that there was an expert that they also mentioned, Paul Bledsoe, who was a former Clinton White House climate change advisor, saying that, quote, the notion of subsidizing coal and nuclear and thereby raising consumer prices is an anathema to Trump appointees and Democrats alike.
Yeah, an anathema.
I like that word.
It is a Could great word. Of the week. But my favorite part of this whole article, the whole situation. So he comes up with this plan to rescue the coal and nuclear power plants.
Yes.
And he presents it to this commission.
Yes.
And the commission says, no, not going to happen.
Yes.
And his response was, as intended, my proposal initiated a national debate on the resiliency of our electrical system. So he was like, I thought all along, this is what I wanted to do. What I was really looking to do. It wasn't really so much the plan, but I wanted to start the conversation. So I put this ridiculous plan forward that, of course, you rejected out of hand. Mm. Oh, what a crock of shit.
Yeah. And they pointed out that it's the transmission lines and the web that feeds the grid that is really more at risk and more of a problem, which we'll talk about in a little bit. There's one really useful solution to that. Batteries.
Batteries.
Yes.
Batteries. Now we'll talk about semi-trucks and electric semi-trucks and Tesla electric semi-trucks. Shan't we?
Yeah, I mean, as far as autos go, you know, we've sucked all the information into the Model 3 sphere since you and Mel are all living the Model 3 life.
You know as well as I do, me and you could sit here and talk for 6 hours about the Model 3, but we won't.
Or Tesla.
So this is an article from trucks.com, which is amazing. I would love to own trucks.com.
Well, I subscribe to a bunch of trucker websites
and you do.
Get their RSS feeds because I'm really interested in trucking. This is a huge area for not only Tesla, but for clean transportation.
And oddly enough, you were subscribed to all of that trucking stuff before you even started doing this show. It's not even related. You were just interested in CB radios and truck stops and where to get the best chimichangas.
10-4, good buddy. And so in this article from trucks.com, it's called The Analyst's Report, The Economic Case for the Tesla Semi-Truck. And they pointed out in the article that lots of truck companies and truck experts all poo-pooed the Tesla Semi, saying that it was not going to be the golden egg.
The bee's knees, the cat's meows.
The best thing that could have hit the...
Patty's pajamas.
Yeah, it's not that way. It's not going to be that good, that there's going to be problems, that they've overpromised and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy said, well, he looked to Alexander Potter, who's the senior research analyst at the Piper Jaffray and Company Investment House.
And also Harry's uncle.
Oh, Harry Jaffray?
No, Harry Potter.
Oh.
Come on, Robert. That joke
Potter,
just
Piper,
died.
Potter, Piper.
No, Alexander Potter, Harry's uncle. It's a whole... Now it's not funny. Now it's not funny anymore.
Alexander Potter.
It was funny.
Harry Potter. So that would make him a muggle. Or maybe he isn't.
A muggle maybe or he's a mudblood? Wizard. Isn't it? I don't know. Who cares?
It depends. You know, mudblood is, that's bad stuff.
All right.
That's a Slytherin kind of slur.
Okay. Moving on.
So Piper Jaffray, big investment house. They're always on the Tesla earnings calls. They're always asking questions. That's where I know the name from. But this smart fellow, Alexander Potter, went through and said that in his analysis, and I've put the link in for the longer article, that the Tesla truck could achieve a 2-year payback. But read the fine print, because assumptions very much matter. And assumptions include things like unforeseen maintenance costs or downtime that the truck experiences. So you've had no downtime with your Model 3.
I think that's wrong. Okay. Yeah, no, there was like a whole few days of downtime in there somewhere.
So of your 1 week experience with Model 3, you've had, you know, a seventh or maybe one-third downtime.
I'll tell you, though, it's been glorious.
That was a bad thing. And so that would definitely impact the profitability of a Tesla truck. Mm-hmm. How much the range will be adversely affected by hot or cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
How will service be done? In other words, your truck is in, I don't know, Missoula, Montana, and it breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no Tesla truck service centers in Missoula. What are they going to do? That's a good question. They're not going to, I mean, if they send a Ranger in a truck to go fix your truck, that's a hell of a long way. They're going to bring you a separate truck that you can, it's
well, but you're under
questions.
The assumption that now, what happens if you're in Missoula, Montana, in your S?
Right. Well, there's probably more access to a Tesla mechanic for an S near Missoula, Montana, than there is for a semi.
You know why, Robert?
Why is that?
Because there's cars built. And once the trucks are built, Tesla will support it. They're not going to make a $200,000 vehicle and not be able to support it. Besides, it'll fix itself. It's AI.
a little welder will come out and fix the axle.
Instead of a driver,
yes,
a mechanic.
Ooh.
Boom. You don't lose any jobs. You transition everybody over, and they're just there in case. No downtime. Because it still saves money, because there's no 10-hour downtime, right?
Oh, that you're mechanic, talking about the Tesla truck being fully AI.
Right. The truck's driving itself, right? It's auto-driving itself, and the mechanic's in the back sleeping, playing Xbox, having a burrito, chimichanga from your favorite truck stop, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. And so Mr. Potter,
Henry's
uncle.
Harry's
uncle, said that the cost of the truck is the biggest X factor. And he says, as well, you know, it sounds really good, but don't expect the truck industry to stand still.
No.
Almost every major truck brand is working on an electric truck.
Yeah, some are farther even along.
Yeah, well, this one, Navistar International, their chief exec, Troy Clark.
Good for you, Troy.
Yeah. He said his company will have more electric trucks on the road than Tesla by 2025.
Boom. And then he dropped the mic. He walked away. He's like, take that, Tesla.
Is 2025 like the new 2020? Or is it, wait, it's far beyond the new 2020?
We don't know. We're not sure. We'll start to get a feel for that, I'm assuming, coming up here.
So you remember how Elon, up on the big screen during the reveal of the Tesla Semi, he put up the coefficient of drag and made it similar to like a supercar, the Bugatti Chiron, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so this guy says, well, if diesel companies or diesel truck manufacturer mimic Tesla's impressive drag coefficient, then it would be probably a lot harder to justify switching from diesel to electric. So that kind of chilled my blood a little bit.
But it just has to make a little better financial sense. And then the environmental bonus to all of these trucking companies is going to be just push them right over the edge.
Well, I mean, if there is like a carbon tax on transportation that does come down the pipeline, that would certainly push this transition forward.
We got bigger problems in like 25 years. I know we've discussed this in the past with like now no one is buying fuel.
Right.
How are we fixing the roads?
That's true. We have to figure out a different way. Although lots of states have created these electric vehicle sort of fee structures so that if you have an EV, even though you're not buying gas, you're still paying $70 a year or $150 a year in some sort of a road fee to help cover the cost of fixing the roads.
And how do you feel about that? Because you're not very happy about a tax for electrons. You were like, I'm already paying a premium. Remember that?
That's true. I had that big beef about that, and I still have it. I still think that as long as electric vehicles are not subsidized like gas or diesel vehicles are subsidized, right? Because of the cost associated with burning the fuel and the extraction of the fuel and the spillage of the fuel, all of that, because electric vehicles, I think, cost a lot more. And if they were on par with electric vehicles based on carbon tax and based on pollution tax, then I wouldn't care about it. But I do, because I think I'm already paying more than my share. So that's it for trucks.
Is it?
We're not really going to talk about cars this week. We're going to talk about trucks again, because there's a great autonomous vehicle article from the Rolling Stone.
Right. And that this article, you're correct. We're not going to talk about trucks. We're going to talk about truckers.
Right.
Different.
Well, trucks, truckers, I see them as simpatico.
So a couple of things just to get started with this article. Truckers, I don't know if you knew this, they earn $60 billion in annual wages. And trucking is the most, this was the most surprising thing, this
Another
stat right
most.
Here. Trucking is the most common profession in 29 of our 50 states, Robert. That's three-fifths of the whole country almost.
That's a lot.
That is a big, big deal. So
not necessarily three-fifths of the population, but it is a lot of states.
Right. In a lot of states, the biggest profession is truck driving. 70% of the goods that we get travel at some point by truck. And from 2000 to 2010, the output from America's factories soared. Right? Little known information right here. But manufacturers slashed 5.6 million jobs because of automation and other tech advantage. So we're always like, China this and China that, right? It's automation at home. Homegrown automation drove 88% of those layoffs, according to research from Ball State University.
That's an impressive number.
It's a big number.
That the automation and tech advances, they drove 88% of the layoffs.
Yeah.
In manufacturing.
And the overall trucking industry in the America is $700 billion. So, of course, there are a lot of people trying to get a piece of that pie.
Yeah. And it's not like the current administration is at all concerned about this. In fact, they're pushing whatever balls to the walls. Can I say that on the podcast?
You just did. I'm not going to repeat it though.
They want to go full bore on automation of manufacturing and on automobiles or trucks.
Yeah.
So I feel sorry. I feel sorry for the American trucker.
Right.
I want to find a sort of golden lining to this.
We need a pillow soft landing. So I'm going to give you a few more stats, right? A report by the International Transport Forum projects roughly 1 million heavy truck drivers will lose their jobs by 2025. This is based on automation, right? This is based on autonomous trucks hitting the road. McKinsey Global Institute thinks it may be even more dramatic, 85% automation or 1.5 million jobs lost by 2027. So these are big, big deals. The Trump administration, like you said, has sided with the automakers and is an initial advisory council, right? Was stocked with CEOs of people that are pushing this technology stuff forward, robotic trucking, Uber, Tesla, all of those folks. And he his tax plan offers big breaks for investment in all sorts of automation. So his own transportation secretary vowed that the administration will be a, quote, catalyst for a driverless future, which is really good to hear on some levels.
But it depends on which side of the fence you are. If you are dependent on a job in which you're driving, heads up, you know, if you're a taxi driver, an Uber driver, a Lyft driver, a truck driver, a UPS, FedEx driver, all these people are there's a storm a-coming.
Yeah, there is. I mean, definitely keep your eyes open. And according to Anthony Lewandowski, who was Uber's former automation star, superstar engineer, right? Yeah. He says, eventually, there will be no cab on the front of a truck or no room for a human. None of that will be happening.
And in fact, I was just pulling this up. We didn't actually put the article formally in the show notes, but 2 days ago, GM announced that it's going to be bringing a Bolt to market next year that has no steering wheel and no driving interface
there
for humans.
Done.
So
walk away.
Yeah, GM is pushing the envelope as well.
I do wonder if that thing's going to only be used for like ride sharing services as opposed to trying to sell that thing. You can barely get a guy, a salesperson, to know information about the Bolt. Can you imagine, like, you get in that thing, you buy it, like, there's no steering wheel? Explain that one, Billy.
Well, what GM needs to work on, as well as the other dealers, is a robot that knows how to answer questions and be objective. So when you walk in to buy a car, it would say, "Hello, Tom, what would you like to look at today?"
Your robot voice is weird.
I want to look at a autonomous Bolt. Yeah. Can you show me that? Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Let's walk right over here to this beautiful blue model.
His voice changes quite a bit. He's like a valet, an English sort of. I don't know what's happening.
I guess when you
there.
Walk it's up to the robot, you could ask the robot, would you like to hear a Scottish accent?
I would like to have a robotic salesman. And I would like that salesman to also be the general manager so he didn't have to leave the room constantly to go talk to his general manager about the deal he's about to make.
Yeah, right. That's funny.
That would be a whole lot better. So then we've talked about platooning in the past. That's one driver with two trucks following, like, very tightly attached to the front lead truck.
Which saves energy and it saves on two more drivers.
Right, two more drivers. And that's already being road tested by Volvo and Daimler.
Yep.
And in October 2016, that's quite a while from where we are right now in the past, an Uber subsidy called Auto dispatched an automated rig with 2,000 cases of Budweiser. The truck hauled 120 miles south along the base of the Rockies from Fort Collins to Colorado Springs, navigating around Mile High Stadium without its trailer drifting from the lane, right?
I remember that story. You know how I remember it?
Because we talked about it?
Because I listened to Talking Tesla.
Oh, there you go.
So I thought that this was really amazing because I even went looking farther still.
You are
so
a deep diver.
Two, three stories deep now. Yeah. In Australia, the Rio Tinto company.
It's Tinto.
Tinto. Rio Tinto. Tint. Maybe because it's all brown and red out there.
I don't know.
And so they have already dispatched so many. I think it's 72 of these enormous pickup trucks. They're like dumpsters, but they're like the size of houses.
Yeah.
We actually talked about this in the past as well.
Yeah.
These trucks drive 24/7 without a driver, autonomously, and they're all throughout this huge mine that goes there. So Rio Tinto's got 73 of these trucks running 24/7 without any drivers, and they're being controlled from afar. And in fact, they've already worked at this big mine in Australia on drills and trains and all sorts of interconnected transfer devices so that this mine went from something like 5,000 employees down to 1,000. And I think they're looking to go back to 500. So this is big. I even looked for articles coming out of Australia because there must be somebody who's upset that all these high-paying jobs in the mines are going away. And in fact, there's a number of like provinces or areas that were very upset because they are losing the peripheral business. So the 4,000 people who used to work at the mine aren't buying food.
Yeah, robots don't eat pizzas, Robert.
That's right. They're not buying shoes.
Robots don't wear shoes, Robert.
They're not buying Carhartt.
Robots don't wear Carhartt, Robert.
Exactly. And so the taxes that come from all those sales and all the people who get employed by those, it's all going away.
It's terrible.
How do we fix this?
I don't know, man. We're going to need to value thinking, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe everybody could have a podcast and
I guess
also make no money.
And have nothing but busy work all day.
But it's damn fun.
It is. And so one of the points that's made here is that trucking is America's deadliest job.
It's true. So this is like a little bit of a silver lining on some way. 745 fatalities in 2015. Even deadlier than working on electrical power lines. So if you happen to be the Wichita lineman and you're still on the line, truck driving is more dangerous.
And maybe truck drivers could consider becoming linemen.
For the county.
Yeah.
With Glenn Campbell. I love that song.
God rest his soul. And so they talk in the article, they interview a guy who is a long-term trucker, who is expecting to retire before this all really hits his industry.
Pribble. His name's Pribble.
Mr. Pribble. Not related to Harry Potter.
No.
And he says that, you know, these trucks aren't going to help undo, you know, big heavy loads.
It's true.
Unjam things mm-hmm. or put chains on.
Drive in the snow.
Yeah. But there may be stations where, you know, some dude runs over with like a bunch of chains and then puts chains on the trucks or just pulls the chains off the trucks and the trucks signal like an Uber. They need an Uber guy not to drive, but to actually just come and put on chains.
Robo chain installer.
Exactly. Well, maybe there would be a robot.
Man, I saw this movie once. It was called The Terminator. They did everything. Hmm. It was terrible.
There was a good TV show. Should we do a quick...
No.
No. Electric Dreams by Philip K. Dick. It just came out on Amazon.
Nice. Nothing's
I think it was in the second episode. They had like robotic factory that could do everything.
Always trying to get the media pick of the week back in the show.
I love the media picks, man.
I know you did.
So... how do we fix this, Tom?
I don't know. How do we fix it?
So Bill Gates, Elon, and Zuckerberg all have proposed this universal basic income. I don't know. I mean, these are pretty smart guys. I haven't thought it all the way through, but it does sort of upend economics.
It changes things a lot, but I would like to say if you're going to have this universal basic income, I would like to see something come out of it, some sort of productivity. But, you know, you talk about retraining, right, this flood of unemployed drivers, but that will also push down the wages in other jobs, right? So you train all these people to do X, and now there's 50 more people, you know, in every town that can do X, and the owners drive that down. So factory workers who were pushed out of $25 an hour jobs with generous benefits can only find, you know, working in the service sector for not even half that much. And so these are big thinking questions. I'm super stoked that Zuckerberg is on it because we all know what amazing positive force in the world. Where would we all be
without Facebook?
Without cat videos on Facebook getting 400 million likes. I mean, that's really a dig because I do like Facebook, but still, like Bill Gates, Elon, Zuckerberg.
That might be what all the people who are put out of work by the robots do is hang out on Facebook all the time, and now they'll get paid for doing that.
Maybe they should just go work for Facebook.
Well, Facebook may not need them because it'll have robots writing code.
Or SpaceX.
Yeah, well, SpaceX, I don't know. SpaceX is going to probably automate a lot of its services, too. But how about we talk about solar power?
Let's talk about the sun.
Because
the giant fusion ball in the sky.
Correct. Fusion.
Yeah,
exactly.
Nailed it.
Putting that hydrogen together.
40 plus years old, and I finally figured out how the sun works.
Good on you.
You're never too old to learn, Robert.
I think there's some people still working on that one. But that solar power could run all of this automation.
The whole thing, the whole kit and caboodle.
The only problem is that we need to have economics drive how we build our solar infrastructure and use our solar power.
I don't have any more answers for all of these problems that we come up with.
So California invested heavily in solar power, and there's so much that other states are sometimes paid to take it.
Initially, when I read that headline, it kind of pissed me off as somebody in California who I'm assuming, I don't know, has paid a lot of money to build solar plants based on my utility bills and taxes and such.
Especially for the folks who pay these services that will take an additional amount of money from you to offset any power you get from like a coal-fired power plant or a natural gas-fired power plant and essentially turn you into an all-solar consumer.
Carbon offsets and such.
Yes. And so... this comes from the Los Angeles Times.
LA Times in the house!
And maybe that title is a little bit clickbaitish.
You think?
On 14 days during March, Arizona utilities got a gift from California.
You're welcome, Arizona.
Not only did they get free solar power.
You're welcome again.
California produced so much solar power on those days that it actually paid Arizona to take excess electricity that it couldn't use.
This I don't get. Why did we pay them to take it, Robert?
Yeah, it's like an exchange.
What would happen if we didn't pay them? Would they be like, no, thank you. We do not want your solar power. Like, what? I don't know. That's the part that I don't understand.
We would see our electrical grid in California get overloaded.
Explode.
and there would be a fire.
But why would they not take it? Why would they not be like, free energy? That's amazing.
Well, I know that Arizona has basically turned off the tap on private homes being covered in solar and receiving sort of net metering and all of the benefits there. But, you know, they do have a fair amount of solar there.
Yeah.
And these were probably quite sunny days.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that Arizona probably had a fair amount of excess of its own, which I believe they talk about in the article.
Mm.
But they could have used it. And so Arizona, thankfully, took our power and our money. I don't know. This feels Enron-like. Maybe that's why you're feeling kind of...
No, I'm not upset about it. I'm just curious. There didn't feel like there was that much information about why the money is exchanging hands. But I get it. You know what? We made it. It's clean. Let them use it. So it cost us some more money, you know, probably
this
wasn't
is,
a lot.
This is like the story of your loved one who says, you know, I took out the Tesla and I had a little accident. And you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, my Tesla, but I'm glad my loved one is well.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. So in this article, the most important thing, sorry, mm-hmm. you want some coffee, Tom?
And the earth is my loved one?
Is that California has achieved dramatic success in increasing renewable energy.
Yeah.
And it says that production has soared so much that the targets that were set, that is, they mandated, in California, it was mandated that half of the state's electricity should come from renewable resources by 2030. It's at 25% right now. And it says these targets look laughably easy to achieve.
Right, but then you get to this one point right here. Californians pay 50% more for energy than the national average.
It's because we're not using coal. And we've been using solar all those years and building out solar all those years when it was more expensive and we were subsidizing it.
So it cost us more and damn it, it was worth it.
I think so.
Yeah.
We're paying it forward.
We are.
And now we have so much that, you know, on those days, why don't they give us the electricity for free?
We're double paying it forward.
Yeah. But again, why don't they give it to us for free? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Because they're mean-spirited, Robert.
Yeah, I don't know. This article talks a lot about how economics drive public utilities. And the bottom line is public utilities earn money by building power plants.
Okay.
And then they pass those expenses on to us. It helps the manufacturers and the builders of the power plants. It helps the utilities. And it just ends up costing us money. And so it turns out there's like 9 power plant projects that are very expensive. Most of these are natural gas, very expensive. And it turns out we don't even need them.
We don't need them. Let's not build them.
And so there's been a re-review. Mm. And now they found that a large number of these, I think it was 4 or 5, they're not going to go ahead with. A bunch of money's been spent, but they're not going to go ahead and build them. And there's one right in our backyard.
So maybe that will save us some money, Robert, in the long run.
I think it will. And I think that the thought here, they looked specifically in Los Angeles, in Redondo Beach. I don't know. If you know Los Angeles, you know, the coastal communities, like a little house.
You got your El Segundos, you got your Redondos, your you got Manhattan. Your Huntingtons, your Manhattans. They're all lovely.
They're beautiful. And if you think about what a little tiny house costs on like a 3,000 square foot lot, and it's like $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a piece of crap, and all you want to do is tear it down and build something new,
a beach
if you can. Mm-hmm. Right. So they have a natural gas-fired power plant that is so old it needs to be replaced, and it doesn't need to be replaced. We don't need it. It's only on like 4% of the time.
Bye-bye.
And if they say goodbye, they can build a mixed-use project there. That has got to be worth more than a ton.
That's a lot of property. They should make it a public park.
How about low-income housing?
They should make it low-income housing.
Which would mean you'd have to earn at least $400,000 a year in the beach community.
Not relative low-income housing, Robert. Just actual low-income housing. So, Robert, here's what I have. This is the bottom line for me.
Yeah.
27% of the California energy is now basically renewable. Solar is about 10% of that. And that figure doesn't include the rooftop solar systems that add 4 percentage points. So, Robert, is this a good problem to have or a bad problem to have because, A, will stop building out this solar renewable capacity, because people are going to see this article and freak out and be like, hey, man, we're already paying 50% more than everyone else. We want to keep building these things, blah, 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 blah. What say you?
It depends.
Oh, okay, good.
Depends is always a great answer. I learned that in medical school.
Oh, good.
If somebody asks you a question, you don't really know the answer. Mm-hmm. You say, well, that's a good question. That depends. It gives you a few milliseconds to think.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, I already pre-thought my answer to
How
that.
How long do you have to live, sir? It depends.
That's true. If I continue to smoke and do methamphetamines, not as long. Mm. And so I think it's actually a fantastic problem.
Oh.
The fact that we've been so successful at building out solar and renewables is fantastic. The problem that I have is, why do we have to give it away? Why do we have to pay to give it away?
Yeah.
Why don't we pay less when there is more sun?
Yeah.
Why don't we encourage, like, converting that electricity to hydrogen?
Right.
We talked about taking hydrogen and making it from seawater versus from natural gas, which is a BS. So if we could make hydrogen, you know, there's truck manufacturers that are looking at these hydrogen and a battery combination trucks for long distances.
Uh-huh.
We could use this power. We could transport that hydrogen to some state where they need it, like, I don't know, Wyoming, Louisiana, somewhere, and get people to stop pumping oil. We could spread the wealth. And if there's a problem like, wow, we can't predict when the sun's going to shine and we're going to have too much solar power and these BS arguments, maybe we need AI and some good weather predicting to figure out when are we going to expect a lot more sun, solar production. I mean, this just doesn't seem like it's that big of a problem.
But, okay. We've had this show for many years now.
Mm.
We've talked about hydrogen vehicles many times now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've basically
ripped
into hydrogen vehicles. And now all of a sudden you're like, hey, let's make hydrogen out of seawater and use our excess energy to make hydrogen vehicles that we know are inferior. But I guess I'm going to step back. I'm going to take a little step back. I'm going to be like, okay, to get to the clean air future that we all want, the clean renewable energy future that we all know and love and hope to get to someday,
it's going to take
all the players. It's going to take some hydrogen.
Yeah.
It's going to take some batteries.
Well, we could use hydrogen just as an interim storage method.
Okay.
There's other ways. Mel has talked about
pushing
rail cars uphill.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked, and this is successfully done, pushing water uphill.
Uh-huh.
There's lots of ways to store energy. There's also something called lithium ion batteries.
So, yeah, right. So instead of sending that to Arizona, we could have had big old fat daddy giant power pack situations, super batteries, as it were, and just had them all over the place and just fill this one and fill that one. But I think the bigger problem, the bigger picture issue here is that the grid, as it is right now, is not capable of doing this kind of work, moving it over vast areas and blah, 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 and all that other stuff. So a grid upgrade would be nice. Maybe some folks can be retrained to do that type of work. Or are we going to make robots rebuild the grid too? I don't know. Maybe Elon's going to tunnel under all of our cities and put the grid underground. I don't know anymore. It seems like we're out of control. I can't take it anymore. Never mind. All right, Robert, let's move on. We're going to talk about superchargers. We talked a little bit about superchargers because I found a mystery supercharger, and you were the one. You were the guy. You picked the spot. You knew that I'm only going to drive 6 or 7 miles from my house anyways, and that's probably was most of how you guessed.
Well, there was Santa Clarita.
That's true.
Yeah. There's the new Glendale. There's the new Grove.
Yeah.
Up on Sunset Boulevard in the Palisades, they're building out a beautiful shopping arena area. But yes, I thought it was Calabasas. And maybe I should have the supercharger cap now. I don't have a supercharger cap, but maybe I should be wearing it for this segment of the show.
There you go. Supercharger update, Robert. It looks like a relatively light week in the realm, the world, the situation of chargers, Delos Super.
We have 28 stalls this week. Nothing like last week's 160 stalls. We have two new superchargers in Pickering. Have you been to Pickering?
No.
What do you do in Pickering?
Eat poutine because it's in Ontario.
There you go. I would say eat poutine and drink Molson. You know, I bought a book.
Two things I love, by the way.
All How to Speak in a Canadian.
Oh, great.
And I lost it.
Oh, thank God. Canada, you're welcome. I stole it, so you wouldn't be able to use it.
I've had a lot on the plate the last week.
No, you're busy,
and
man.
So I lost it, but I will find it. The other supercharger is in coal country, in Huntington, West Virginia.
Well, good for you, Huntington, West Virginia. Enjoy your Teslas. Enjoy your supercharger that's probably powered by coal.
Yeah, maybe. Although, I would like to hear more from Elon. Elon, are you listening?
Wow, that's one of Mel's jokes. It's like he was here.
Or one of Elon's minions. I want you to send a message to Elon. I want to know from the supercharger update.
Yeah.
What's up with the promise that the superchargers would be powered by solar energy? What percentage of superchargers are powered, even offset, with solar energy? I want to know this because it makes me concerned.
0.7069 4321 blast off.
Sounds like a password to get into your computer.
It's not.
And so that concerns me, especially when you see how much is being built out. So it was a light week. I mentioned there's only two new open superchargers, but when I look at the map, and I think that, you know, we just had the end of the year with three or four or five major holidays and, you know, people kind of distracted, maybe construction companies not taking on as many contracts. Maybe this is going to be reflective of the next few weeks through January, maybe early February, that we're not going to see a lot of opening of superchargers, but we may see more in the construction zone or the permit zone. So let me just, I'm going to circle around here. Let me finish up that we have one under construction in Texas.
Tejas.
In Southlake. And four that have recently been permitted, three in the United States and one in Griffin, Austria.
I've been to one of these cities in which the permit has been procured.
Los Gatos?
Custer, South Dakota.
Have you?
Custer, South Dakota is a brilliantly lovely small town. And I will tell you this.
Yeah.
Having a supercharger in Custer, South Dakota makes me very excited that I could potentially drive my Model 3 to visit my cousins who have a cabin in the Black Hills adjacent to Custer, South Dakota.
Wow.
That's why I've been to Custer, South Dakota.
Sounds cool. I would love to make sort of like the I-90 crossing over the northern United States
one summer.
South Dakota
is amazing.
I love it. So as I say, it's been a light week.
Yeah.
But when I look over the worldwide supercharger map, I'm quite struck by these clusters of activity in the San Francisco Bay Area, around Southern California, Michigan, Toronto. The New York City, or as you like to say, tri-state area.
The tri-state area.
And in Great Britain, there is a lot of Tesla supercharger activity. Those are the areas that are coming online soon, and I look forward to reporting on them.
Yes, it's going to be a supercharger year of awesomeness.
I got a secret.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so that's it for the supercharger. Now we're going to move into a frontier. Are we not talking about it? Should we?
It's a secret.
Do you think they're listening?
I think they are listening.
Okay, shh.
But I don't know who actually is listening.
Let's whisper.
So it turns out U.S. spy satellite believed lost after SpaceX mission fails, reported in the Wall Street Journal. F*** that.
Did it fail?
Yeah. Let's talk about this.
Oh, was it?
We've been watching for Zuma. Zuma is this magical,
beach. It's a beach right around the corner.
Yeah, it is a beach, in fact. Yeah. Maybe there are answers there.
Maybe.
Secret mission.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows what it is, but Northrop Grumman, who built it.
Maybe.
Picked,
we don't know. We're not even sure.
SpaceX to launch it.
Maybe.
It was supposed to go in November.
Possibly.
And then it was delayed until January.
Or was it?
For some strange reason, like there was a problem with the fairing, but
could have been.
Tom and I went to Vandenberg and saw another launch with the same kind of fairing. No fairing problems there. So lots of funky, unusual, unexplained, and now even more unexplained.
Fingers being pointed in several directions, from several directions, mostly pointed at SpaceX.
Well, initially, SpaceX. In fact, I thought this Wall Street Journal article was beyond laughable because they were really, really darkly holding out SpaceX as having failed, and that this satellite's going to be crashing down. It cost $1 billion to build. And there's so many B's, I just want to say the word bull.
Or did it?
Yeah. So then I did a little more reading. Teslarati has a nice article. The Drive had a nice article. And these dubious rumors that were in mainstream press.
I love the word dubious, by the way.
These dubious rumors in the mainstream press were easily countered. And in fact, I got a tweet just soon after this went off.
You got one like to you, like at Robert?
Paul Mellish sent me a tweet that said, "Didn't Grumman use their own payload adapter? So it's certainly their fault, not SpaceX."
I don't know. Did they?
Stick
I don't know.
To the Tomcat boys.
Either they did or they didn't. It's hard to say really what happened what or what did meant. Happen. There's a lot of things going on here. So this is what I'll say. It was a complete and total loss, or was it a complete and total loss? Was it SpaceX's fault? Was it Northrop Grumman's fault? Was it no one's fault because it's actually up there? Yeah. Hold on. Let me adjust my tinfoil hat really quickly.
Yes.
And try to figure out who's telling the truth or who's not telling the untruths. So there may or may not have been a satellite. It may or may not have been on a SpaceX rocket. It may or may not got into orbit. It may or may not fell out of orbit. It may or may not be covered in stealth technology. It may or may not be named Willy Wonka.
Well, so the problem with the press immediately pointing fingers at SpaceX is that SpaceX has got like 30 launches planned this year, or 29 right. more launches planned this year. And this throws doubt on the SpaceX ability to pull that off.
But here's the key piece of information that I've gleaned, right? So in the past, SpaceX, they had the RUD, right? And what did they do the very next day? They stopped launches until they figured out what happened.
Yeah.
This is not happening right now. SpaceX did not say to the world, hey, well, this satellite may or may not have had a problem, but we may or may not be stopping all launches. No, they're moving forward. So it wasn't their fault, because if it was, they would have stopped.
Yeah, they were bombarded with requests. And it turns out Gwynne Shotwell, who's the president and chief operating officer of SpaceX, said, without a doubt, since the data reviewed so far indicates that no design, operational, or other changes are needed, we do not anticipate any impact on the coming launch schedule. Falcon Heavy has been rolled out to launch pad 39A, and it will have a static fire later this week. We'll shortly be followed by the maiden flight, and we're also preparing for the Falcon 9 launches for SES and Luxembourg from Launch Complex 40. And so, no change in SpaceX activity. Now Northrop Grumman is saying we can't say anything because it was a secret. And I'm looking back into the history of what's going on. So this is a spy satellite. They can't, nobody can see it up there.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Duh. And maybe the intention is that no one sees it up there. There's this organization that tracks all of the devices that are floating around in orbit. And they say, oh, we can't detect anything. Duh.
I don't think any of this is true.
Yeah. So it turns out back in the 90s, the United States at that time spent $10 billion.
With a B.
Billion dollars in the 90s on MSTI. MSTI were two satellites that were cloaked.
I cannot confirm or deny the existence of MSTI.
Well, the cool thing is that when MSTI was launched, there were similar observations and a lot of similar confusion around what happened. It's like they couldn't find it. And then we look into all of these methods by which stealth technology, maybe even cloaking, has been created to make satellites less vulnerable to satellite-destroying technology, and also allow these satellites to buzz around up there, taking pictures or doing whatever they do, and do it stealthily, even using things like balloons and baffling and meshes that deflect and don't allow reflection of radar. And this is all really interesting. I think there's so much cool stuff to read here. If you're really into it, go for it. Enough said.
Yeah, so it looks like, let's be all honest here, it looks like what happened, if it happened, was that it didn't deploy off the end of the rocket ship and didn't get into orbit. But no one's talking. Well, the world will never know, Robert. end.
Well, it will in like 40 years or 50 years when we can file a Freedom of Information request.
But I will tell you this. I have no idea what or if you just said anything about this subject whatsoever. And this podcast will now self-destruct.
Sounds like the...
Although, it feels like it already has.
Mission Impossible.
It feels like we self-destructed it.
So what upcoming launches do we have? So
I don't
know. SpaceX is planning the Falcon Heavy going up on January 29th.
You won't be there.
I don't know.
No, you're here. You're not going.
It's...
You're not going there, and you're not buying a Roadster, and everybody in the Twitter's all, you're not getting a 3 because you're buying a Roadster. You got everybody fooled, Robert. Not me. You're not going.
I want everything.
You're not going, Robert.
I need to be Elon so I can have everything.
All right.
But then I'd have to work even harder. So January 29th, mm-hmm. Falcon Heavy. January 30th.
Mm-hmm. That's the next day.
SES Luxembourg's Falcon 9 is going to take off from Launch Complex 40. Then.
It's like back-to-back launchers.
Yeah. One day after the other. That's why I want to go to Florida. Then. Pushed back. So last week we said on January 30th there was going to be a second launch from Vandenberg, but it's been pushed back to February 10th at 1422, and that's GMT time or UTC time. And that's the microsat for Spain.
What time is that here, Robert?
1422, I think it's 8 hours difference. So mm-hmm. that would make it at like 6:22 in the morning on the 10th.
Pacific coast.
Yeah. Do you want to go?
Maybe.
It might be one of those pre-dawn launches. Ooh. Or right around dawn launches. Say that 10 times really fast.
I could just get in the car and let it drive me.
That's going to include the SpaceX Starlink constellation, and we'll report on that next week. Then, coming up after that, 5 days later, on the 15th, there's going to be another Falcon 9 from Florida for Spanish HipSat.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be March 5th and March 20th. Those are two NASA contracted launches. One is going to resupply the space station, and the other is for a exoplanet survey satellite.
Transiting exoplanet survey satellite. I am nowhere near smart enough to know what that is, but I want one.
Really? Why?
I don't know. It sounds cool.
You want to transit to exoplanets?
It's called TESS.
TESS, exactly. TESS is the study, and it's meant to discover thousands of exoplanets in orbit around the brightest stars in the sky. It's going to be a 2-year survey of the solar neighborhood.
Oh, the survey of the neighborhood. It's like a census, like a planetary census.
And the satellite's kind of cool looking. It's
all satellites are cool looking.
Well, shall we go to letters?
Okay,
the most important
Robert, that
part of
is
the, show.
The meat of the matter is that we've gotten through the articles. It's only taken a day and a half for the most part to get through this one show's worth of articles. Been very exciting. We had Mel, and now it's time to read the letters. And what we don't do occasionally is read all of the letters, and we try to paraphrase the letters because some people write long letters, some people write short letters. We want to get to the gist of the situation. The first letter is Dave Liopke?
Liopke.
Liopke. Two P's, Dave. That seems excessive for one person's last name.
It's in his email address as well, so yeah. I'm going to give it to him. I'm going to just call him Canadian Dave.
All right, you can call him Canadian.
And Canadian Dave has an alternative acronym.
You kind of put out
for
like
the fart car.
A little contestual call for fart acronyms.
Yeah. So he's got FFART, and that stands for the Fossil Fuel Antiquated Road Transportation.
But he added an extra F.
Fossil fuel.
I'll tell you one thing you do not want to do is add an extra F to any of my farts. They are bad enough as it is.
Craig Williamson sent us an email about Model 3 deliveries in Tejas. Dallas, to be sure. He said that he saw a beautiful Model 3 in blue, and I don't think that's Mel, being dropped off at the Mockingbird Lane lot.
That sounds cool. I want my lot to be on Mockingbird Lane.
He was impressed by the car. And so have we been, and we will continue. Or you will continue
I
to
will
discuss
continue.
It.
I will continue. Where are we this week? Just a small short aside, Robert. You're waiting, you're configuring, you're waiting to configure, you're not configuring, you're waiting to not configure. You're like a spy satellite. What is the situation with you and the model tray?
Well, I have a first production Model 3 ready to configure, and I'm going to make an offer of that to one of my coworkers unless somebody in the Talking Tesla Nation really has to have it.
And how are you going to do that transfer?
Yeah, that's like an auto escrow thing. But depending on how well I know the person, it can be quite easy.
But what about the tax implication situation?
Which
the
rebate, tax?
The rebate.
Well, technically, you're supposed to own it for 24 to 30 months in California and the federal world. Yeah. And that's an issue.
That
definitely
is a big, big deal.
I haven't thought it through, but...
That's clear. All right. The next letter comes again from Zbigniew Veselovsky. Damn it. I did it again. Zbigniew Veselovsky, who says, "Hey, Teslanians again. Thanks for reading my email after censoring his pre-Christmas post." I don't even remember what that means.
Censoring's a strong word.
It is. And he said, he was happy to know that even without young Australian strapping Mel, that we were able to butcher his name. So my guess is it's still not Zbigniew Veselovsky, and whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry to, sorry not to, well, I'm actually not sorry. I'm happy to butcher your name for you.
He wanted to talk about charging speed. He is driving a S85D. And his standard supercharger rate is 100 to 118 kilowatts, but he's never managed to score the mythical 120, which is a bummer because that means he doesn't get a sticker.
Thanks, Zbigniew. Mm-hmm. Steven Peters from Belgium.
Oh, Steven is the gentleman, the man, the myth, the legend who brought us you to this Tesla Semi event. And he, turns out, is a crazy person.
Oh, gosh. He's doing good science.
He's doing amazing work.
He's investigating what's going on with autopilot, with ultrasonic detectors.
He learned some things, Robert.
We'll post his YouTube address here. And basically, Stephen took duct tape and sequentially started covering parts of his Model S along the passenger side. Uh-huh. First cameras and then ultrasonic sensors to see at what point would his Model S, which in Belgium, his is like 100 DL.
Yeah.
Really expensive car.
Uh-huh.
How likely is it that he could crash that into a beautiful white Model X that one of his friends was driving, practically causing a $300,000 collision?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're driving down the freeway. He puts a piece of duct tape over the camera and tests the automatic lane changing, right? Because he wanted to know, hey, does the camera do it or do the side sensors do it? Is it the radar? I don't even, they're not radar,
they're
sonar. They're ultrasonics, right? Yeah. So sonar. So he puts a thing over the camera, he hits the right-hand turn thing, boom, the car doesn't go over because it sees the Model X there. He goes a little bit ahead of it, pushes the thing, and the car goes over. Then, in all of his genius, scientific, crazy, mad scientistness, he takes duct tape and plugs every single one of the ultrasonic sensors, puts tape
on the
over
right
them,
side.
On one side of his car, and keeps the lid on the camera.
Yeah.
Right? At the same time.
So he blinds the car.
He blinds the autopilot aspect of the car, goes back out there side by side to his buddy's Model
X. Because he's expecting the car to say, wait, you've blinded me. I can't do that.
Right, right. So the whole point of this is he pushes the right-hand turn thing to turn into the have the car auto lane change. And it does, right into the X. Of course, they were paying attention, so they didn't cause an accident. But so Tesla... The default current software situation in this autopilot is if the car is blind, what the hell? I'm changing lanes anyways.
Wah, wah, wah.
Not the car is blind. Sorry, sir. This is unavailable.
First of all, Stephen, I think you should be wearing a white coat, a lab coat. That's first. Second, I'm glad the highway patrol didn't pull you over.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't think they have highway patrol in Belgium.
Yeah, so
it's called something else.
Check out Stephen Peters' YouTube video. I put it in our Twitter feed yesterday, a little link to it, and it is good stuff.
So this reminded me of when I took some flying lessons.
Yeah, me
too. Before you get into an airplane, you get a checklist.
Oh, good.
Now it's probably on an iPad, but you need to go around the airplane and you need to check on the flaps. You need to check various parts of the airplane to ensure that the airplane is safe to fly. And this makes me think that if you really want to use autopilot and depend on it like I do, you must perform a pre-flight checklist. Walk around your Tesla, make sure that your ultrasonic sensors and your cameras are undamaged. They're not covered in mud, snow, ice, or seagull poop.
Right. So that's why he did the test. He wanted to make sure that in a place where it's muddy, dirty, wintry, those things can get clogged up, and you may be driving and not realize it and hit the right-hand, lane change situation,
yep.
And that thing will go right on over. So, Stephen, you're doing some big, big work over there. We appreciate it.
Daniel Berman is writing us about the Model 3 Headliner, and I mm-hmm. actually got a few tweets on this.
This was a blowing up in the Twitterscape.
Oh, my God. So, Tesla has changed the material that's being used in the Headliner on the Model 3. It started out as Alcantara, and now it's a woven fabric, but it's also, quote, premium.
Yeah, it is. It's premium, or isn't it? I don't know. So what I'm more concerned about is the issue of knowing what Model 3 reservation holders are buying. The change was unexpected. It's not surprising that some people will be disappointed. I did a little tiny bit of research yesterday. I opened up the TeslaWebsite.com, clicked on the Model X, did some configuring, and it's hard to 100% be sure, but if you click on any of the premium options, the options that say premium, premium cream, premium black, premium blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
And do look closely. All of those
yeah.
have Alcantara
hmm.
in the roof and even, on some of the panels.
Even today or?
Correct. Yeah. No, I did this yesterday.
Okay.
And if you don't click on any of those premium things, you can get sort of either that heavy woven fabric that we're seeing in some of the photos, or you can get just regular nylon, which is what, honestly, that was in the S that they gave me as a loaner. And that material is fine to me. But again, is it premium? Is it not premium? Just be more clear on it, and then everybody will leave you people alone.
Well, maybe the problem is there's a shortage in Alcantara land.
But it's a synthetic.
Yeah.
How could there be a shortage of a synthetic? It's in everything.
Well, it is manufactured and marketed by Alcantara SPA.
And a lot of people don't even like Alcantara as a premium product. So, you know what?
It's not the easiest stuff to clean.
I like the way it looks, even when it's kind of dirty. It's a little scruffy like me.
Yeah.
The next letter comes from Paul Boyd, and he says, Tom! With an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Please, please, please race your wife. I have a 2014 rear
race
wheel.
Race your wife.
Yeah, in our cars.
That would be new. Husband and wife drag race.
I think I'd beat her. We have a 60.
You better be careful saying that.
Yeah, you know, I think I would win. I think I would win a race against my wife.
You would
in
win
her.
No,
Model
wait, you
S.
can't win her either. We gotta,
no,
we gotta
I
stay
would
politically
win a
correct.
Race against if I were to race my wife's 60S Model S. I think at the moment I would beat her. That model
beat her. No, you can't say that.
Damn it! I did it again. Anyways, so Paul has a 2014 rear wheel 85, and he would like to know if the Model 3 is faster. And then he kind of insults me a tiny bit. He says, grow a pair and floor it for 5 seconds and let us know the results.
I think this needs to be a Patreon video.
So I did have my wife in the car next to me the other day, and we happened to show up on a street near our house, and it was empty, and I was at a red light. And I looked over at her and I said, are you ready? And that light turned green and I hit the floor and that thing was super fast to 60.
Yeah, we could set up like some cameras.
Faster to 80. I'm not going to lie. Not even faster to 80, but like, man, it goes from 60 to 80 very, very quickly.
You are working to take away my reputation and I'm willing to give it to you.
Yeah,
it's fine by me.
Mm-hmm.
He also says that he was investing in a company that takes lithium
mm-hmm.
out of Chile, and he says that the stock price has gone up since Elon went there and had dinner and frolicked on the beach with Heather. And I looked it up, and it turns out that it went from like 50 to 62 in that period of time, which pretty impressive.
This is not a stock recommendation by either one of us. Please do your due diligence if you're ever going to purchase a stock based on what us two idiots have to say about it.
But it would be a recommendation to go and enjoy the beaches in Chile if you're stuck in New York with like 14 degree temperatures.
I mean, if you want to take any piece of advice from me, go to the beaches in Chile. That's it.
Pat.
Right there.
Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Pat Reed.
Hi, Pat.
See this?
Mm-hmm.
New York City sues, divests from oil firms over climate change. I did see this article, and I think we even talked about it in the news section a couple of weeks ago, where New York City and state pension funds are divesting or stated that they are going to divest themselves from fossil fuel companies over the next, I think it's 10 years.
Yeah, so they are selling $5 billion in their big oil investments from its pension funds. And this is from finance.yahoo.com/news, New York taking steps to divest pension funds. So here's what I'll say about this. I was initially kind of like, oh, that's cool. Good for you, New York State, getting that pension. They have like $189 billion in pension funds. But if you go through and you read the comments,
yeah,
nobody else really thinks this is a great thing because they look at New York as being very hypocritical. Is New York doing everything in its power to not use heating oil in its old, pre-war buildings that haven't been, updated for the most energy efficient? Right. So,
I mean, when I was in New York, mm-hmm. I spent 2 weeks there.
Yeah.
Stayed in a couple of vintage buildings. One was built in like 1902.
Yeah.
The other one in the 60s.
Yeah.
And, it's like I had to, so the places are heated with radiators, with hot water. I had to like put windows.
Some of them with oil.
Put windows open mm-hmm. during the night because I couldn't sleep. It was so hot in the building, but I couldn't adjust very much. It was very hard to adjust the heat. So you're like burning whatever to heat these buildings and then opening windows to let the excess heat out. And people are doing this, I'm certain, all over the city.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree. They need to step it up. They need to put in triple pane windows everywhere, insulate better, get more smart technology to run their heating and cooling systems.
Yeah.
That takes time. How long does it take for you to take $20 out of the ATM?
It takes a while. 4 seconds.
4 seconds. And if New York and New York State can divest themselves of fossil fuels mm-hmm. and push that envelope towards renewables, mm-hmm. go for it, man. It's just another chink in the armor.
Reinvest in renewables. But I really just bring up that comment thing as a point of like, there's always going to be two sides to everything. So look at these articles, look at the comments, really critically evaluate all of this stuff and really take a big picture look of it. I think it's good for them to divest, but what are they going to reinvest in?
Right.
Just like you said.
Solar.
The next letter comes from Jeff Bass.
I wonder if this is Jeff Bass that I know, but I don't know this
He might very
address.
Well be because, okay, he says, hey, Mel. Well, Mel's not even here. So he writes a letter to the show,
right?
But it's really just to Mel. So you know what? Maybe we shouldn't even read it. Let's read it. Listen to your podcast, seen your videos on YouTube. Thanks for the insight. He lives in Tarzana. And he has a Model 3 reservation, and he has never been able to see one up close. Welcome to the
Guess
freaking
what?
Club, brother.
Yeah.
But so he sent him an email, and he wanted to see Mel's Model 3, and it happened. Mel made it happen. So Mel hooked up with Jeff, showed him the Model 3. My guess is Jeff ordered it because it's a lovely vehicle.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you happen to live in the Los Angeles area and you're on the fence about a Model 3, so apparently Mel's giving test drives. He's the sales guy in the Western region.
Yeah, he's got so much time that he can't freaking participate in the podcast for more than 5 minutes.
That's a good point, Robert.
But
he's
he can go and hang with Jeff and
out.
A thousand mm-hmm. other people who want to see a Model 3. What's up with that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't get a hold of Mel and Mel blows you off like he blows me off, you can go to the Tesla Century City store right now.
Right now, this
because
moment?
Because as of Friday, the 12th of January, they put a Model 3 in there. You can put mm-hmm. your grubby hands on it, touch it, sit in it, adjust it, play with the frunk, feel all of the body panels and everything.
You can get frunky.
Get yourself down to the frunken Tesla store in Century City and check it out.
In Century City, that's in Los Angeles. It's in California. And look, we're sorry, Tesla Nation. We know this show seems very left coast centric. And we talk about big, giant 40 stall superchargers. They're all here. What's the news? We're sorry. Model 3's coming. You're going to get big supercharger stations. You're going to get all kinds of things. Please, East Coasters, if you're on the East Coast, if you're in the Midwest, if you're in the Central, send us some letters. Send us some love. We'll talk about all of your local Tesla stuff.
And in 4 days' time,
four,
maybe three or two, depending on when the show gets to your ears,
mm-hmm.
I encourage you to come to Agoura Hills.
Also in California.
The Tesla Service Center, where on the 18th, January 18th, at 6 p.m., the Tesla Owners Club Los Angeles will be having their semi-annual mixer with one Tom Wolfson and Mel Herbert and a blue and a white Model 3.
Will you be there too, Robert?
Roger that.
Oh, so it'll be Tom, Robert, and Melvis. What do you think, honestly, the chances of Mel being at this thing are?
40%.
Slim to none. That's what I would say.
I twisted his arm today.
Oh, that's good. So the next letter comes from Franco Capizzo, and he says, a delayed win is better than a loss. And
like it.
It's interesting. His thought process is this. He was recently thinking about Elon Musk, as we do, waxing poetic. And he says he puts out crazy timelines. He doesn't meet them, creates an army of naysayers and stock shorters. But there's a big difference between how Musk operates and how other dreamers operate in that Musk actually delivers, albeit a little bit later.
Late.
But he's doing it. Not that much later, a little bit later.
Allows us to have some fun.
A little tiny bit later.
Because we chide him.
He's a big dreamer. Yeah, gives us stuff to talk about. So this is an EV Annex blog post. The Elon Musk moonshot approach, missed deadlines are a good thing. This is from a long time ago, 2015.
But still.
We're going back into the vault.
Still
the
happening.
The Tesla vault. It's still happening. And this is interesting. Here's the case in point. The timid promises made by major automakers who announce plans to launch new lines of electric vehicles by 2025 or by politicians who pledge to reduce greenhouse gases by 2050. These goals may be better than nothing, but they're not exciting. Mm. And that's what Elon's doing.
Right.
He's exciting us. He's like, look, I'm going to build a car for $35,000 that can drive itself across the country. I'm going to do it in a year. A year! I mean, does he do it in a year? No. Is it $35,000? No. But it's close, and it's a great car.
Well, if you're, you know, used to waiting for other things to happen, like people in various factions of the government to deliver on their promises, these things take time.
Yeah.
Even if you write Santa for what you want for Christmas, it takes time.
So he makes aggressive timelines, but he seems to have a plan, people.
I'm going to say one last really positive note that we can end on.
I'm going to say one thing before you say one last positive note. Okay. Franco wants to drive in our Model 3s, and he thinks there's a chance in hell that I'm driving to Orange County. Now that I don't have to drive, it's possible.
Oh, you mean like maybe, autopilot?
Yeah,
to
he offered to buy me and Melvis lunch so he could drive in the Model 3s. I mean, lunch at Club 33 in Disneyland? Is that what we're talking about?
Ooh. I guess I'd come down for that too.
I bet you would, but you don't have a Model 3 for Franco to drive. So
that's true.
All right. That's the last letter, Robert. And in closing,
I wanted to remind everybody and report that I received a check from Southern California Edison. If you're in the Los Angeles area, and you get your electricity from Southern California Edison, there's something called the Clean Fuels Reward Program. And all you have to do is fill out an online form, send a copy of your registration, and they will give you $450 for driving an electric car.
I'm not with Southern California Edison, but I want my $450, Robert. Split it with me.
Well, I've got a second one in for the other S now. So,
will you split that one with me?
I'm looking forward to another $450. It's called Southern California Edison's Clean Fuel Rewards Program. SCECleanFuel.com/login. Go for it. And we're done.
That's the show. That is Talking Tesla 121. We had a little Mel.
Yeah.
A lot of Robert and Tom.
Yeah.
A little bit of inappropriate language here and there and the other thing.
Can't help it.
Talked about the Model 3.
It's our passion.
Check out the Twitter, because you never know who you might run into on the old Twitter.
Yep.
And thanks again to the patrons.
Leave us a iTunes review.
iTunes review. Send us an email, info@talkingtesla.net. And we shall see you at the beginning of 122. Bye-bye.
Out.
Talking Tesla is a production of Fully Boo Incorporated, hosted by Mel Herbert, Tom Wolfson, and Robert Rosenblum, edited by Eliza Jane Barnes, and produced by CC Herbert and Mel Herbert. To support Talking Tesla, go to patreon.com/talkingtesla. To find our referral codes, go to talkingtesla.net/about. And finally, if you love the show, go write us a review on iTunes.